Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on the companies we mention. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Monday Upbeat Markets, and today is Monday the 18th of May. How are things going with you in the Archer household, Charles?
Yeah, not too shabby. We've got a bit of rain. Did a lot of gardening the past week or so. I've realised I don't like gardening, so we're going to get someone in to do the garden professionally, because it's I'm not very green fingered. I don't really enjoy it. But other than that, all good. How's Hawaii?
That sounds like a fantastic plan. Get them to do all the hard work, and you just enjoy picking a few things. And
that
would be ideal.
The problem is with it, right? Is that it's really hard to find anyone to do any work in the first place in the UK.
Yeah,
you know,
oh, absolutely.
Get people to quote and show up, and you know, money's waiting. Just you know, it's hard work. You can't get people to do things anymore.
Indeed. No, Hawaii's good. As you can see, I purchased my first Hawaiian shirt actually today. I was shopping all day Sunday, because it's still Sunday for me. And we went to Target, we went to Walmart, we went to Ross, we went to all the main shops that are here in Kona, Hawaii. And and yesterday on the Saturday, we went to a lovely beach about 5 o'clock and surfed and did a few things in the water for a couple of hours. So, so it's a hard life.
It sounds like a very hard life. I feel so much stress for you.
Yes, indeed. It's still not nice living in a small apartment with four of us, I have to say. But anyway, such is life. Okay, so we decided that we would just do a recap of the stocks that we chose in Mums in December last year, just to give people a bit of an update on what we're thinking in terms of these stocks. Just to give you an idea, the current valuation of the 15 stocks that are now in that group is 271,000. Obviously, from the original would have been 150,000. So we're 76% up on per stock. That's not too shabby, is it?
Yeah, you live with that.
Obviously, there's going to be some good ones and there's going to be some bad ones. So we're going to start with the not so wonderful ones. So the first one, which is currently down 81%, is WeCap. Now, the WeCap story is basically around WeShop, which went to the NASDAQ and listed in the US last year at $20 a share, was up as high as $150+ a share at one point, which meant that the WeCap holding of WeShop shares, which is about 11% of the company, was monumentally higher. Now the WeShop shares are trading around $6 or $7. It basically means that the WeCap shares are not worthless, but not worth a great deal at this moment in time. I think break-even point is around this point, $6 or $7. But if you believe in the story of WeShop, which is basically a situation where if you do your shopping in certain places, you will receive shares in WeShop 12 months down the line as a concept, and they actually get some momentum in it, then I think it's going to work. Obviously, from a WeCap point of view, it's not working in a big way at the moment from a share price point of view. But let's see what happens.
Yeah, indeed.
So really, of all the shares, that's the main disaster as we stand.
Well, I think that's the name of the game often when you know, shares go list, or you know, interest go list in the US, is that, you know, you're hoping that they'll go extremely well, and sometimes they don't. And that's the risk that you take.
Yeah, and I think there's probably been a group of shorters on WeShop shares. So I think it's pretty much oversold as we speak, because it did have quite a bounce there up to $15, $16, $17, $18 a share in a matter of days, only a few weeks back. So yeah, let's keep an eye on it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one then is Haydale. Do you want to give us your view on Haydale? Currently down 33%, which is a bit of a shocker, really, because I don't think they've done too much to deserve that right now.
Well, I think it was Graham's pick more than anybody else's, wasn't it? But But I think the core business, as it's like the Just Heat for heating buildings, that just needs to grow organically through time, right? But then the product development, you know, all of the kind of more exciting kind of stuff, that's all in the development and trial stage. And so those developments and trials cost money. And the problem isn't the right word. Basically, you have interim results are coming out in late May, so a week or two from now. And then you'll know whether the contracts and the revenue is enough, not only to cover capital costs, but also to cover the product development as well. And if that core revenue is large enough to cover that, then you probably see a bump in the share price. And then it's not, then it'll justify the share price fall. But basically, you're basically operating on a financial data vacuum, and you know, for the next week or two. And that's just uncertainty, and the market doesn't like it. I think that's basically what's going on there. I mean, what would you say?
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. I think there's just uncertainty. I think they did do a raise, if I remember rightly, and that knocked it back, but it's well below even that price now as well. So yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the next one anyway. It's currently down 11%. So, you know, I mean, basically it could sneeze and possibly go even if it did it. Mm. But that's Alert and Defence Holdings. So tell us your thoughts on Defence Holdings.
Yeah, I think basically you the promise of this stock is huge, right? Because you have a trailblazer valuation. If you want exposure to sovereign AI, and you're a UK investor and you want UK sovereign AI, this is basically the only stock and listed stock where you can get it. As a theme, it's a red, red hot theme. We've had a new CEO who's been in place for a little bit of time now. And I think it's just the case. We need news, we need contracts, we need RNSs. And I'm not concerned about it. Do you know, I put this stock in, you know, the moonshot category for me. Which is basically where you put in a decent amount of capital, but it is risk capital. And if it drops to 30%, you're meant to just be able to, you know, live with that. And if it rises 100%, you try not to be too stressed about it. The purpose is you're looking for, you know, massive, massive multi-bag gains. And other stocks, you know, where we've done this. Kendrick is a good example very recently, but Guardian Metal, another. There were times where you would have been down massively, you know, initially, and also times where you could have sold for 100 or 200% profit, you know, same with Defence Holdings. But if you cap yourself like that, then you're gonna end up. That's not what that kind of investment is for. That kind of investment is for holding and hoping that you do incredibly well. And I think they'll be absolutely fine over the long run. The news will come, and the share price will move as it does. In the meantime, if you're stressed about the share price being down at the moment, then you've probably overinvested in something that's quite risky. But you know, if you're like me and you quite like risk and you're not too worried about what happens sort of day to day or month to month, then you should be fine.
Yeah, and please, guys, don't stick all your eggs in the one basket.
Yeah, well,
have 10 or 12 stocks minimum.
So
and
yeah.
And spread the risk, you know. It doesn't mean you can't have favorites where you have more than enough in them. But the fact of the matter is, if you're not sleeping at night because it's either going very well or not going very well, then you're probably overdoing it. You know, I know we all want to put all of our money in one stock and it does 50 times. Like, let's be honest, you know, in our hearts, we'd like that to be the case, but it doesn't work. It really doesn't work. So when you have a winner, take some off, put it into other things. When you have a loser, either cut your losses, or if you still strongly believe in the story, then put some more money in it, but not too much to reduce your average, and then go again.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just risk management, right? And for us, we have, you know, a lot more money into AIM stocks than the average person should. But that's because we do it full time.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, the IFA would be having palpitations if they saw what we had in AIM stocks in general. So yeah. There you go. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Jubilee Metals Group, down not at all, really. Basically, we said it was 3p. It's about 3p now. What's your thoughts on Jubilee Metals?
Well, it's jam tomorrow. I just, if you look at the assets, right, and that they have on the book and the cash coming to them from the sale, from the South African assets, then just fundamentally, it's just horrendously undervalued. I'm assuming that that cash from the South African asset sale continues to come through. Then your kind of your risk level around 3p or just under, in my mind, is very low. You know, you could liquidate the whole company and get far more than 3p right now. Now,
yeah, I think I have to agree with you. Now, the other issue, this is because they are going to be doing the copper plates, if you like, they're going to need a lot of sulfuric acid.
Mm.
So this is the other issue that we've got to look at in terms of when you're looking at copper plays now. Are they going to be going and needing those things, or can they just sell the ore to somebody else and it's somebody else's problem?
But then whoever they sell it to will demand a lower price regardless, because their own operating costs have risen. So it's
or a higher price, because ultimately then all the costs are then just passed on, you know. Yeah, so in other words, the copper price moves to 15,000, 16,000, 17,000, which I can see that happening, you know, especially if this sulfuric acid thing continues on.
Well, I think for me, the thing is with Jubilee is the guidance they put out, I think the market didn't like it. And I also think because it's still has a pretty decent market cap, you have investors, if they want to sell and get cash for whatever reason, Jubilee seems to be what's targeted kind of unfairly. But I also think, you know, it just needs to be the case that production needs to get up to scratch over the next 6 to 12 months. The copper production needs to be solid. With the copper price where it is and the assets that they have in terms of the mines, but also the processing power, it should do really, really well over the next year. It should be at 6-7p very comfortably. So we will wait and see. But again, the problem is it's all an execution and people
pulling it down. I agree with you. When I chose, that was one of my picks when I chose it in December. I mean, we've seen it at nearly 5p this year already.
Yeah. Well, okay, so for example, the large waste rock project, right? Originally, they had a deal penciled in with IRH, which is, you know, massive, massive, massive company. A new deal for that could land at any moment, for example, you know, and re-rate the stock immediately. And that is a company maker in its own right. So, you know, I think a lot of investors are just, the problem that it is, right, is that particularly in junior resources, particularly copper stocks, you've watched every other copper stock you have go ballistic. And this one just hasn't moved. So there's a significant amount of frustration. And I think that's basically what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've been out to the new mine there, and it's going to be mega. I mean, it really is. It's a company maker in itself. You're going to have these adjoined pits. You know, the grade is pretty good in a lot of the areas, and there's no reason why it shouldn't do very, very, very well.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. Now, these are all the ones that are basically haven't moved at all. We'll go on to Sylvanus Therapeutics. You know, I had great expectations that this was going to be significantly higher much sooner, because I was hoping that we were going to get some sort of movement on the, I think it's the 01 potential to actually sell it off, or at least do some sort of deal. It looks like that's now not going to happen, which longer term is probably better for Sylvanus. But in the short term, it's taken a bit of the shine off it. What's your thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, I did the research into this, and also asked a couple of friends who know more about this than I do to look into it. It's a real deal. You know, I'm just not worried about it. I think there's this, you know, the short termism in small caps is part of the reason why a lot of people don't make any serious money. The assets are real. They're strong. What's been achieved at Solvenus is far, far better than the current standard of care. The clinical trials are ongoing and doing well. And all you just have to kind of tough it out. And it is a stock where, yeah, you know, if it's below 0.25, like it is now, I am, you know, I'm happily say I'm actively averaging down. So, you know, I don't say that about many stocks, you know, on the record when I am, but I just think the liquidity is not really there and the sentiment's not really there. But fundamentally, when it was trading much higher compared to now, nothing has changed in terms of the assets in the company. Nothing. So I'm relaxed about it. I mean, what do you think? Yep.
No, I'm in 100% agreement with you. I think it's short-termism, which in these pharma plays, nothing is short-term ultimately. So, you know, in a way, it's a bit like a mining stock, isn't it? I mean, you know, somebody can come across a mine and then all of a sudden, you know, bang, everything happens quickly. And then you could be waiting for 6, 12, 18 months and then everybody's twiddling their thumbs. I don't think that these stocks are that much different. You know,
right. Well, I think your problem with it is that basically it's either clinical trial results or some kind of joint venture or deal with a major pharma partner. That's what will move the stock. And and so you basically have a company where you don't get that many RNSs, but when they do come, they're very, very material. And so you have a kind of lumpy sort of shoots up, comes back down, shoots up, come back down. But eventually, like I have no doubt, eventually they will sign a deal with a major for at least one of their assets. And it'll re-rate. It'll just go boom. It just will.
Yeah, I think with Professor Nutt still cronking out the different uses of these things as well, I think it's going to be more than one deal, to be honest. But anyway, let's move on now. Another one that hasn't moved. Again, it has moved. It's gone up more than 50% this year and then come back down again. Is Bizant Resources. What do you think, Charles?
Yeah, so it's a tale of two stocks almost. It's Bizant, because on the one hand, if you look at where the copper and gold prices are and compare it to, you know, my original thesis when I was looking at it a couple of years ago, it's the profit margins, the amount of money that's going to be made there, particularly now that we have 90% of the project, is just ridiculous. To the point where you know, I say this for a few of the stocks that we cover, that it's actually not believable how much money might potentially be made. All of the caveats in the world, right? So, you know, you have to be careful. It is, you know, risk has come. The mining, proper mining, hasn't started yet, but millions and millions and millions of dollars potentially in potential.
Potentially billions if he extends the project.
Yeah, well, indeed. Well, if you look at the strike and the amount of exploration that can be done. Anyway, put that to one side. The financing that was organized still hasn't quite come through. We did have a raise there, which I think irritated a lot of investors. And it's a question of when that finance comes through, then you'll have proper news flow up and producing by the end of the year is the plan. We're now in May. The potential for a huge, huge re-rate here is really there. But the financing has to come. And sadly, it is a little bit binary. Financing comes, it shoots up, and then everything else will just be assumed to go ahead. But every day struggles.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't think it's as binary as you think. I think it's going to happen one way or the other. And I think the finance is going to come. I say that with confidence that I can be very wrong. but the scenario is, I think 0.08 pence on Bizant is one hell of an opportunity.
If you believe,
then boom. You're probably going to, on financing, and then 2 months later, 3 months later, we're going to be selling concentrate. You're going to 3, 4, 5 times your money, I think, is the reality.
Or more. Well, I think it's the, because you get paid at gate, right? You know, we've confirmed this with Colin, and I think your the market, I suspect, you know, we'll get a bump and the share price will move up and move up. the market won't believe until you have your first sort of RNS saying we've got money for the first shipment. And then suddenly people will get very excited. And I would imagine, but I can't guarantee, that in terms of risk reward, perhaps the best time to get in, this is not advice, will be when the financing has landed and that risk factor is gone, but long before that first shipment takes off.
Yeah, as soon as the financing comes in. But if you're a gambling man, now's the time.
Indeed. What kind of man are we? Thing is, it's funny when we record these because you're giving an opinion about what the average person should do, but it's also about what we personally do, and those are two very different things. So it's quite
I agree with you. The risk criteria. I mean, I think people think we know everything, and we really don't. We have the RNSs. We talk a little bit with the management, but at the end of the day, they're only going on prepositions anyway, you know, or presumption. Say the right word.
Presumption.
Presumption. Yeah.
Presumptions.
Yeah. They are basically giving their opinion, but nobody really knows until the drill hole goes in and we actually know. Mm. You know, because somebody was saying to me about Kendrick, oh, well, you knew all about it. I said, I didn't. I just knew that we'd taken an option on an agreement that, from what I was being told, you know, this potentially could be mega. And it had come from the same people who had done Ongombo and African Pioneer. So therefore, it should be pretty good. Anyway. Right, let's move on now. Another one that hasn't really moved is Ajax Resources. I'll go with this one. I mean, I think Ippolito has done a fantastic job. We've now got many different assets on the go. I think it's materially undervalued. You know, you've only basically got about a £5 million valuation minus the cash or plus the cash. They're also going to have a real uplift with the uranium play, which is coming, which is called Revali, which is going to be in conjunction with Zenith. I think that's going to be led by Ippolito because Ippolito basically found the asset, I think, when he used to work in Zenith. So we've got that. We've got the deals with Appian. We've got Eureka potentially to be sold, which could then create more money. And, you know, they're going after copper, gold, silver. And, you know, what could be more attractive at this time and in the next number of years than copper, gold, silver projects? I see this as a GMET situation. It's only 120 million shares in issue, and they're tightly held. And when people really start to realize the potential value in some of these projects, then I think we're going to see a massive re-rate.
I think it's potentially you're going to have a lot of news all at the same time. Is what it feels like. Mm. You know, the Appian capital factor is massive for me, but it's obviously you've got the potential Eureka disposal, acquisition of, you know, Pagranta and multiple assets. You've got the uranium spinoff, and you know, other than Arkel, you know, I know Power Metal Resources has a, you know, uranium exploration program out in the Athabasca as well. There's very few uranium plays in London, and uranium is all the rage.
Yeah.
So the potential for it to do extraordinarily well at the IPO gate is really strong. But it feels to me like, you know, and I don't like this, by the way. I like news to be spread out. But, you know, sometimes you can't control it. I think it will all come at the same time for Ajax, is what it feels like at the moment. So it's been a while.
Probably right.
And then it'll be like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, every day something big. But we'll see.
Yeah, and we're going to be covering Revali. I've been speaking with Ippolito. So if anybody is interested in the IPO, then contact us in some way, either me or Charles, and we'll put you in touch with Ippolito in terms of maybe participating in the IPO if you're interested. What's next? Next, which again is flat, basically, is Sovereign Metals. I'll leave this one up to you, Charles, because this is your baby.
Yeah, I'm not stressed about Sovereign. This is one of, well, actually, it's my biggest position at the moment. Obviously, we got the share price up to about 50p record highs, and then the big orange monkey decided to piss about in Iran and throw water all over the bonfire, But we were off the races for a moment there. I'm not worried about it. The technical due diligence, the partnership with the IFC, World Bank, with Rio Tinto. This is the largest rutile deposit in the world. It's the second largest graphite deposit in the world. All the infrastructure resources there. China, Japan, even they're investing hundreds of millions into the port, into the railway, into the corridor, into the Kala. But I think I'll tell you what I think it is. It's you know, Japan mentioned in our last podcast, they were considering a US listing, and that could be a big catalyst. But I think more than anything else, it's the rare earth potential. Those heavy rare earths. If you look at, you know, what Kendrick did in terms of share price appreciation, when it found like a sizable, decent, interesting rare earth deposit, it just shot up. You look at the way the rare earth stocks have just gone bananas, you know, literally across the world. Those rare earths have not been highlighted properly at the moment by the company. And it's just because it's early days. But when they have more data on them and they're ready to release, I'm pretty confident it'll shoot up. And this asset, you know, this asset will get bought out. I suspect by the end of the year. We shall see. But I just think it's so undervalued for what they have. And again, I think it suffers from the same problem that a lot of stocks like this suffer, which is if you actually have a genuine tier one world-class deposit, what do you value it at? You know, because this market doesn't understand how to value things properly. And this is one of the very, very few genuine tier one, proven tier one assets. And it should be a hell of a lot higher than this. So we shall see.
Yeah, especially in the UK. I'm sorry that things don't get valued properly until they go somewhere else. But anyway, let's move on. Yeah, I agree with your sentiments anyway. I think, you know, it was getting there with 50p, but it's got to be worth a pound in anybody's money. And if they find some rare earths, then it could be several pounds. Well, but
they have them. They just need a little bit of technical due diligence, and an RNS will come out at some point saying heavy rare earths, tons of them, easily processed, US wants them, you know, done. But yeah. I think you've got the world...
And Sapan's been to the US to talk to them about it already.
Bank, you know, underpinning everything at the moment now. You know, this is an institution that lent out $78-80 billion last year of capital to build projects. Like this, it's the signposts are all there, and I think it's one of those companies where when the big news does eventually drop, everyone will think, oh, how could we not see it? Because you've been led to water like a horse. You know, you don't want to take a drink, we can't make you.
Yeah, they can't make you drinkers, right? Okay, I'm going to leave this one up to you because I know absolutely nothing about it. Upland Resources, basically up 3-4%, so not really moved at all.
Yeah, so Upland is again one of those jam tomorrow stocks, sadly. But I jumped into it a couple of months ago because I think the jam is coming this year. The assets that they have potentially in Southeast Asia, what they have in the US, the connection with Lost Soldier and then Mark Bruner, who's, you know, a bona fide billionaire. The thing is, right, it's interesting because I don't really want to particularly talk about the assets because the assets have been done to death elsewhere and people know what they are. It's the individuals who've backed this company in the past 2 or 3 months, put their own money into it, and I'm talking about it. These are very serious individuals who make money. And for me with Upland, that's my thesis, is that when these people come into a company, put their own money into a company, buy shares, take positions, they're talking them up, at some point, it's just going to blow. Because I think often what happens with these kind of oil plays is that they kind of drag along for a few years. And then when it is all about to kick off, people in the know take positions and make their money. And it's not fair, but it is just how it works. And I think that's what will happen with Upland later on this year. Simple as that, really.
Okay, very good. Okay, we're moving into the ones that have now started to move a little bit. So the next one is Extract Resources, up 38% since Christmas time. I'll take Extract Resources. I mean, for me, I think everybody's underestimating the antimony. I think it's going to be producing antimony in Morocco there before the end of the year for sure, and maybe long before then. And we own a very large percentage of that. I think it's either 80 or 90% of the asset. And if it produces at any level whatsoever, that is going to be an absolute game changer. Second thing then is we've got 35% of the small mining scenario at Silver King. It's already started to produce the sulfides, I think. And then there's a processing plant then for the oxides. I think I've got that the right way around. And subsequently, having visited Silver King as a mine, you know, you got a huge silver deposit there as well as the copper. It's a massive open pit already. Glencore did a lot of drilling in there and realized that it was a good asset, but they didn't want to carry on in Zambia at that time. The extension of that open pit could be massive, and that could actually have a big impact. And then the third leg of this story is basically Bushranger. $14,000 copper is now putting Bushranger firmly in the sights of this is a project. And if we actually start to see copper going even higher, then I think, you know, people are going to come knocking on the door and want 1.3 million tons of contained copper, and probably more because it's open always. And then finally, they're owed a considerable amount of cash as well for some of the other stuff that they've already got rid of in terms of the gold project.
The Manica stuff.
Manica stuff. So, you know, for me, the risk of this one, like even retracing, is minimal. Only one of these projects needs to go off for it to be worth several times what it's worth now. If we get the antinomy and Silver King, this is going to be producing more revenue than its current market cap. So it's a bit like a Bazan.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be producing 3-4 times its current market cap.
It's funny because I do take what you're saying about Silver King and about the antinomy, but I look at Bushranger as the market moving catalyst here, because that asset, I think, quite easily $50 million US that you could sell that for in these current market conditions, and potentially more. I think
much more, because the reality is that there's over 38 million US dollars being spent on it. Yeah. I think so that money's got to come back already, and then whatever the value is after that.
Yeah. So this is the thing. It's pretty certain at this point now that there are companies in Australia looking at that project, looking at where it's located in particular, because of how easy it would be to develop, and just thinking, well, is copper going to stay high like it is? You know, why would we not take out this project now? I think it's almost poetic, because back in the day, it was, you know, when the resource statement came out and the share price fell and everyone was very kind of angry and upset. It would be funny for it to now be the reason for it to re-rate back to a record highs. So, but why not? I think it's this sort of like, it's this, you know, I remember when it came out a few years ago, and it did say something like, it wouldn't be economic unless copper was $10,000 or $12,000. It's one of those two. And now it's sitting at what?
When it first came out, it was just over $11,000. Then they did some ore sorting stuff, which brought it down to $10,000.
Yeah. But then you have a bit of inflation, don't you? So, you know, things sort of 11-ish, 12. But regardless, the other thing is just security of supply. Do you know? You want to get a copper project up and running. We need more copper. If copper prices keeps going up, you can just see it will get developed. Somebody will want to develop it and they'll put the money in. It's simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, for me, it is actually one of the biggest holdings I've got. And I think it's got the potential in the next 12, 18 months to be a £100 million company minimum. And that's really just on the antinomy and the Silver King. If we get the boost of Bushranger, then, you know, who knows what the valuation could be. Okay. Greatland Resources. I'll let you you go with that one, Charles.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes from strength to strength. I think the thing is with Greatland, obviously, when they took over the farm, it was a very obvious buy, right? And it became more and more obvious, and then the gold price rocketed and rocketed. And now the question is with Greatland is, where does it go next? I think £10 a share easily is doable from here. I would say, you know, like a probably have guns pointed at me at this point. I would say if you were took part in that placing or bought in shortly thereafter and you're sitting on a huge paper profit, you know, this is a stock where if you take a little bit off the table, it's not going to hurt anybody. Retail isn't moving this properly anymore. This is an institutional grade now.
Yeah.
But I think all you have to do is look at
Well, here's the question, Charles. Right? When you make a large profit on something, that there are diminishing returns in percentage terms, even though you see, you know, let's say you invested 10 and it's now worth 70, and it goes up 5%. Well, then you've made £3,500, and you think, wow, I've made £3,500. But in percentage terms, you've still only made 5%. So there is an argument that says, should I be taking half of that money and putting it in the next two or three seed things that I think are good?
Yeah, I think the thing is, though, is that it's not a penny stock anymore on any level. It's a growth stock. It's a multi-billion pound valuation. So it's for a different class of investor. And, you know, it's basically for someone who wants to hold it for a long term for capital gains and then for future dividends. And the ability to consolidate the entire Paterson region and bring everything out there under its production. The West Dome exploration is crazy. You know, Havieron will come online in the not too distant future, and the all-in sustaining cost there is basically nothing. You know, it's pretty much one of the lowest projects globally. You've also got the tungsten asset at Callaghan's, and I'm certain that'll be monetized in some way or another before the end of the year. And that's another big boost that, you know, I think the market isn't appreciating properly. But ultimately, I think, you know, this is the reason why I don't cover it on my Substack anymore, is that it's become, I think it's going to be bigger. I think all you have to do is compare it to, you know, Genesis Minerals or other companies on the SX, as I did a few months ago. And it's still very undervalued compared to its peers on the SX. It really is as simple as that, you know? So all you have to look at is the all-in sustaining costs, the ounces of gold in the ground. You don't really need to look at sentiment, just look at the fundamentals. It's not very complex. But I think it can go much, much higher. The question is, you know, what kind of who is this stock for now? It's not for, you know, it's not for AIM investors looking to sort of multi-bag. It's for investors who, you know, like the company, keeping it in their pension for the long term over the next 20, 30 years. Which, you know, I have shares for that reason now. But the explosive gains, I think a lot of them are done with. And now you might double your money in the next year or two, but we're not going to see a 10 or 20x.
Which in the real world is phenomenal, isn't it? But our AIM world, that's not even worth looking at.
No, but it's for example, if you're a family office or you're a fund or a very high net worth investor, one of the big, and even for me, right, you know, that there are stocks where I used to take kind of material positions where, because you're investing with, you know, comparatively so much money now, you can't do it without moving the price up, and you can't very easily get your money out either. With Greatland, there's a huge amount of liquidity and there's a massive market cap. So if you want to put $500,000-$600,000 into that stock, you know you'll be able to get it out in liquidity terms without, you know, barely affecting the price at all. Whereas, you know, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, if you want to put $500,000 into it, you've got to contact, you know, a major shareholder and try and buy the shares on the market.
You may be buying the company out.
Yeah, indeed. but it's funny, right? Like it's like Kendrick is a classic one, right? But there are others where, like, I was looking at this when it was under, you know, I think his market cap's like $800,000 or something when I initially looked back in 2024. For the record, I didn't foresee it acquiring a rare earth asset, you know, a couple of years later and then the stock going to the moon. We just got lucky.
Yeah,
but
yeah, absolutely.
Let's say you put $20,000 into that company, or even $10,000, and then 1%. Okay, there's been a bit of dilution. Do you know, it's the potential for these things to go absolutely bananas. Well,
that's what Doc Holliday did, didn't he? He took 8%, didn't he? So
not bad work, you know, if you can get it. But
I'm sure he made £1 million from it at the very least.
Well, we should. Based. Yeah, well, there's Doc. Doc is working on and I know he's Marmite-y, so you know, no shying away from that. But Doc is working on another company, for the Onyx, right? And now he's sitting on a load of cash. What's he going to do with that cash? I think that's an interesting question. If you like playing in the microcap space.
That's PYC, isn't it? I think it is.
Yeah.
Is the ticker.
Maybe not the worst stock to go in for a little trade if he's going to support.
Okay, so nice. Doc, if you're listening to us, give Charles or me a ring, and we'll have a chat with you about it. Okay, so let's keep on moving. Greatland's up 40%, which, as you described, in terms of if it's that type of stock, 40% in 5 or 6 months is fantastic.
Indeed.
The next one is Active Energy, currently up 50%, based on the 0.08 to 0.12. Active Energy, I think it'd be much higher if Mr. Trump hadn't gone in and destroyed or tried to destroy Iran, because obviously the UAE's been affected, which is where most of the business is conducted. But ultimately, the reason why I chose this was quite simple. It's an electrical utility company that's providing electricity to AI and BTC situations in the UAE. And now they've done a deal with a huge NASDAQ-based company. I think it's worth about $3 billion, this company. And they're going to be doing all of their connections, electrical connections, and they're also going to be benefiting from the Bitcoin that they produce, as well as the normal fees. So I think it's only just begun. I really do. I think this is a 10 bagger in the making, still only got a market cap of about £5 million. And I'm in it to win it. It's probably about 6 million, actually. Sorry. So, but you get the drift. Mm-hmm. Not a lot. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Guardian Metal Resources up 60%. Go for it, Charles.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too shabby. I mean, Guardian's quite a fun one now because the share price is all over the place. You know, you can be over £3, drop slightly below £2, shoot back up to £2.50. It's in a kind of weird price discovery mode. Is where it is, basically. And no one's quite sure how much it should be worth, is what it feels like now. Because obviously, if you're like us and you bought back in at sort of 7, 8p or whatever it was back in the day in 2023, sitting on those huge returns. But actually, you know, can you say the best is still to come in terms of share price appreciation? It might be tricky, because the market cap is so high. But in terms of corporate development, And all the sort of good things that are coming for the stock, I think there is more to come. I think that you're looking at a trade or asset sale there in the not too distant future. I think somebody bigger will buy it and develop it. Simple as that, really. And they'll have to pay a premium.
It's not a Greatland Gold situation, but it's because they're not producing. But it's not far off it. Ultimately, it's gone to a big market cap. It's now listed on the New York Stock Exchange as an ADR, as well as in the UK on AIM. And, you know, Oliver and the team there have basically, you know, owned the tungsten space in terms of onshore US, Nevada. And, I think genuinely it'll go much higher, as in I think it could go 2 or 3 times this price at the very least.
Yeah.
Once the US really get hold of it and it starts moving towards production, I think there's going to be a huge US grant coming. Though Oliver doesn't want to say anything about any of that, but I think it's coming because that's just the way that the US want to do it. So
yeah, I think.
At one point, I think that because we picked this at 148, it was up 100% this year.
Mm-hmm.
But now, obviously, it's only up 60%. And as you say, maybe only a week ago, it was only up 30 or 40% because it was down below £2.
Yeah, I think it's the problem. I think the big problem is, and we see this all the time, is you think with your kind of like your UK AIM head, right, about money.
Yep.
And I spent so much of the past year in New York, and you can't imagine the psychology of money in the US and how different things are. You know, and just how big the valuations of companies can be, often just based on nothing. You know, if you look, particularly if you look at like the AI and the tech startups over there, you know, you can have a startup with the right name and it can be worth $10 billion by the end of the day, just because you've got the right people involved with no assets at all. So when you say,
I think maybe more like $50 million, not 10. 10's like for the shell.
Yeah, well, billion. But yeah, Kev, I think so. You know, with Guardian, if it was still just trading on AIM, then I think it would struggle to retain this valuation. But ultimately, it's the US that will push it higher and higher.
Yeah.
And we cross our fingers. And you know, I think for Oliver as well, just in general, and the team there, he's worked extremely hard. And you know, I don't think anyone ever deserves to make a load of money. But if anyone did deserve to make a load of money because of hard work ethic, it would be him. So,
yeah. No, he does work hard, and he is a bit of a perfectionist as well, and he knows it, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was in third place. In second place, Energy Pathways. Well, we got that license in the end. We got a gas storage license. What's your thoughts?
Well,
currently up 160%. That was up Friday.
It's another one of those funny stories. It's the classic sort of like when things are on sale, no one wants to buy stuff in the stock market. And when things are going to the moon, that's when everyone wants to pile it. And it was what, 2.5p at one point?
I was going to say, did you buy a load around 2p? Because I did.
And you know, I'm saying to people, you know, buy it. And I think it was sort of, you know, it had the Section 35 at that point as well, I believe.
Yeah.
So they've told you it's a project of national significance. What did you think was going to happen, that they wouldn't get the license? And then I think that the most obvious indicator for me was the, because it came a few days before the license announced, was the £50 million financing, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything at the time because you you don't want to kind of push the market around too much when things are quite febrile. But when the financing got announced, my immediate reaction was, well, they've been told they need to get that financing in place in order to be awarded the license. And the terms of the financing are not particularly relevant. They'll get the license from having the financing. And then potentially they'll be able to renegotiate the finance in the future, now that they have the license in place from a stronger position. You know, but yeah. It was so obvious, you know, like it's Section 35, you've got the financing in place. What did you think was going to happen next? It was just an obvious spike. It's come back down a bit now, obviously. And I think after euphoria, It will settle around sort of 9-10p ish for a few weeks. And then I think the question is, you know, it's what's the next kind of big bit of chunky news? Because they have all the right partners, they've got cash in place now, they've got the license. And I think it is a question of now, where's the next bit of chunky news coming from? And I think you kind of need now is a roadmap. Because in terms of the actual investment case, in terms of the potential revenue, is just off the scale, right? You put everything
it's total blue sky. I mean, you could actually, I could be asking you, how many pounds per share do you think this is going to be worth?
If it all works out, it's a stock you could retire off. You know,
absolutely, 100%.
And I do think Ben has the technical capability to get there. But I think for a lot of people, not for a lot of people, it just is what it is, right? Is everybody's been waiting for the license forever. Did you ever watch Finding Nemo? You ever seen this? No?
Yes.
You have. So at the end, in the post-credits, spoiler warning, everyone, for the child's film, but the fish are in their little fish bags, the plastic bags, and they've got out of the tank, and they're bobbing up and down in the ocean, and then one of them says, now what? And then the film cuts to the end. And that's a lot of companies, you wait for that kind of massive transitional catalyst. Energy Pathways has now had theirs, and now they're now what? And obviously now what is build the damn thing. You know,
yeah,
but a lot of that is you need to kind of very carefully lay out the pathway for it,
I think there's going to be quite a few steps and quite a few big financing things that will happen in a very positive way for them and shareholders, and I think it'll only go from strength to strength here. It's one to build on, I think, if you've got the opportunity. Up 160%, but if it goes to a pound, it could be up 1500%. Now, it won't probably be this year, but over the next 2 or 3 years, you know, I think this could go bananas.
It's our kind of stock, right? You know, like I think I'm trying to think of the words, what we're looking for is stuff that can do that, you know, a few 100% a year for multiple years in a row. Things like Kendrick, where you get, you know, 3-4,000% returns in the space of a couple of months, is not ordinary or normal. You just, honestly, you get a little bit lucky. It is luck.
Yeah, absolutely. But Kendrick's still got a lot to go. This is the, I mean, we were talking about it on the Sunday roast, that the comparison value of Kendrick to lots of stocks, GWMO was the one that I happened to use, similar market cap, and yet this thing has, you know, potentially, you know, rare earths in the ground of 100 billion plus. It's bananas.
It's got the same issue with Sovereign, even though it is much, much earlier stage, and there is a lot of work to be done on it, is that the belief that it could possibly be that big, that large scale, it's hard for the market to believe. It's hard for me to believe. It's never hard for you to believe, Kev. You believe always.
Okay. This is now going to lead me straight into which is the winner so far this year. Up 929% at £1.75 is Delta Gold Technologies, because I believed. Not many people believed, but I believed, and I thought, this is groundbreaking. These guys are going to put together something special. And over the last 6 months, boy, have they put something special together. And I think it's only just begun.
Yeah.
100 million market cap. And it's still, compared to its comparisons in the US, is cheap as chips.
Did you ever, Prince of Egypt, as a Christian, I know you
yes,
are.
Yes, the Prince of Egypt. Egypt. I know.
Probably yes. Regardless, I think it's a great animated film, just in general.
Yes, it is. It's a great film.
There's a song in it. There can be miracles if you yes. believe. I think there's like a monkey in your head that sort of sings that song to you.
Do you know, it can go very wrong, because I definitely believed amazing AI was going to be a miracle as well. So like, don't always believe me, but I think ultimately, I think if you believe me more than you don't believe me, then you're going to have a pretty reasonable return.
Well, it's 60% of the time it works every time, but
Yeah.
I don't know. I think with Delta, I think it's, you know, obviously it's shot up. But again, this is quite interesting, is that if you look at the people that were in Delta Gold, right, and the share structure and who was offered the pre-IPO, the IPO, it really does just go to show how important having the right people in the right place in these things are before they come to market. You know, a lot of it success. Obviously, you can't generate patented stuff out of thin air. So the company actually has to work as well. But a lot of it is, you know, do we know that these people who have been offered the pre-IPO, who have been given the IPO, are they conviction shareholders who are happy to hold and wait for the thesis to play out? You know, or are they going to flip for 10%? And if they're the second type, then you're toast.
You don't even need them to be conviction for it to work out. You just need to be that they're not in it for 10%. They might be in it for 200%, 300%, 400%.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, a huge number of shareholders will still take a profit. Now, one of the things that did happen in Delta Gold, and that's one of the things that I'm looking for any IPOs that are coming, is that you have you know, EIS or SEIS, because basically those people are then going, well, I'm up 500%. And if I hold it, I'm going to get all of that tax free. So I'm not going to sell. So
yeah,
those
for 3 years.
These situations are extremely important. And I'm looking at IPOs, pre-IPOs that I'm getting offered left, right and center. And we must say that there is going to be loads of IPOs coming in the next 6 to 9 months.
So just
understand, as the market, guys, there's going to be loads of opportunities.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of them are pretty good, you know, from first examination that I've done. And quite a lot of them are in the resource space, few in the tech space. And, you know, we're looking at them now and saying, this is quite interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm in 9 of them. Right. Okay. Which are coming that are coming up in the next 4 or 5 months. And it's quite interesting, actually, because, you know, I don't give advice on this, but, you know, my opinion is you either need to list before the end of June or in September, but not in the summer months because there's no liquidity and it's generally not the greatest idea. But I remember a couple of years ago, there was three or four IPOs and each one was like a massive event. And I would say, particularly to sophisticated investors out there who might be listening, that the IPO pipeline is really, really kicked into gear. And so, you don't need to be in every one. That some of the ones that I've been offered are not good. Some of them are, are average and some of them are exceptional. And so you previously, if an IPO came to market and it was the only one for sort of 4 or 5 months, everyone took it because that's just the only one that was available. Now you can afford to be a little bit selective. And I don't know. I mean, why do you think it is? Obviously, the market's kind of record highs. And particularly in the resource space, potentially a lot of projects, people are thinking actually these can be monetizable now. But is it interesting that in the UK, there's this sort of the diatribe is the government is useless and everything is awful and the taxes are really high. And yet actually, we've got the highest AI spending pretty much anywhere in the world outside of the US. We've got, some of the best wet lab space, some of the best biotech, most of the best universities. And in the small cap space, you've got, potentially a dozen companies, new ones coming in the next few months. Actually, is there a lot more growth than what we was presupposing?
I'm not sure that's true. I think what has happened is that there has been almost constipation in the IPO market that finally they've got to crap them out. Now it doesn't mean they've all been waiting for a long, long time, but ultimately the good ones have come to the surface and have effectively that I think is what's going to happen for the rest of this year. Now, to your point, the IPOs that are very good and that we can see they're very good, you got to fight to get into the IPO or the pre-IPO. Okay, so you've either got to know the right people or you've got to basically be in with the broker and then you've got an opportunity. If you're not in either of those things, no chance. You've got a chance in the IPO, but the reality is, again, you've got to be in with the broker. So there is an argument, and again, people need to think about this because I wouldn't have thought of this as an investor previously. There is an argument that you do have a brokerage account in London and not just online, IG, or whoever it happens to be, because this is one of the only ways that you get the opportunity to go into these IPOs.
I think the other thing as well, unofficially, because this is not officially allowed, but unofficially, if you have a large position in a stock that's doing well and your broker calls you up and says, look, we need some shares because somebody wants them, and you know that they're going to be sold to somebody who's going to hold them, then say yes. The odds are if you're helpful to your broker that they're going to be helpful to you. They're going to call you up with opportunities. They're going to tell you, this is the pre-IPO coming, it's an IPO coming. And if you're not a helpful person, then as a general rule, you're going to get offered at last. It just is the way it works.
Or not at all.
Yeah. And some of these things that are coming are going to do extraordinarily well. They really are. So, and we can't really, I'm not sure, often we're not allowed to talk about them actually. But there's a lot coming in the pipeline and it's going to be super, super fun.
I mean, without talking about them, there is a couple of copper ones, there is a gold one, there is a tungsten one, there is another tech one.
A couple of crypto ones coming as well.
I'm happy to say there's a Tau one coming, another Tau one.
Obviously the uranium Zenith play.
The uranium Zenith, which is open to talk about. I've already said anyone who's interested, give us a shout. We'll put you in touch.
We also know the Apertura / Red Capital, the Venezuelan oil. So there's so many. There's a few that's already been announced, but there's so many that are just coming. And is it gonna be exciting? The only thing would say is that, again, it comes back to that point about having the right people in the pre-IPO and IPOs, is that if there's tons of IPOs, then often the temptation is to get in them, flip for the easy money, and then get into the next one. It has to be the right people in.
I'm not sure that's going to continue on, though, to be honest. I mean, this Revali, which is Zenith and Ajax, This is going to be tight, very tight. It's a very similar setup to GMET when you think about it, because the two companies have taken big positions themselves. I'm told that there is going to be some institutional investment as well, and then a small amount in retail. So I think it's going to be a very interesting one.
They're raising a few
only months. Raising 1.5 million, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, not much. Right.
Yeah.
Ah, it's going to be exciting. Anyway, other than that...
Okay, so anyway, we'll go back just to recap on the numbers. Currently up 76% per pick. Now, obviously, if you took Delta Gold out of that, we wouldn't be quite as wonderful. But that's the whole point of why you have X number of shares in your portfolio. If you'd put 10 grand in each one of those, you'd now be up £117,000. And you'd be very happy with yourself, I think.
Indeed. Well, let's get happier for the rest of the year, potentially. As long as you know, the Holmes situation doesn't collapse the market. But it seems no one seems to care about that anymore for some reason.
But, until it happens. Anyway, down to the football. We're in the last week of the season now. We've got a big match tonight, Manchester City against Bournemouth. They need to win for it to go to the last day of the season. In fact, no, it's not Manchester United, City tonight. It's Arsenal. Arsenal need to win, and then Manchester City tomorrow. Chelsea against Spurs. Spurs need a point now to stay up, and then West Ham are doomed. And then we've got the European Cups being played out. Aston Villa are in one, Crystal Palace are in another, and Arsenal are in the main one. So, all very exciting stuff. It's going to be busy. And then we're on to the World Cup in the great United States of America and Mexico and Canada. So let's hope they can give love to each other at this time when there is a bit of issues with them.
Lovely football commentary, Kev. I think you missed a calling in another life, maybe, on the BBC. But other than the football, remember, the market is on fire at the moment. And because it's Monday, mum's the word.
This podcast was brought to you by Monday Upbeat Markets. If you would like to appear on a future episode of the Mums Podcast, please email mondayupbeatmarkets@gmail.com.